Hi guys, welcome to the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech. I'm your host, Jack Teal, and this is a podcast for accounting tech startup founders focused on no BS, candid conversations about the challenges and benefits of building a startup in the accounting industry. Great to be back alongside my co-host, Johan, for another hopefully exhilarating episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit. We're joined by a special guest today, someone whose startup journey has captivated many of us in the LinkedIn bubble, and that is Joyce Ong, chartered accountant and co-founder of Tax Nuggets Academy. Awesome to have you here today, Joyce.
Hi, Jack. Hi, Joanne. Thanks for having me. I am not just a founder of an accounting tech company, but also an ex-accountant as well. So yeah, can't wait to complain and get over that.
Perfectly said. And I mean, it seems to be the way. Most founders of accounting tech startups are accountants because I guess it's just not that sexy a space for everybody else. So glad to have you here and adding value to the ecosystem. Now, before we get into the journey that you've been on today, just to provide our listeners a little bit of background on you, I suppose I'll start. You let me know if there's anything else you want to add to this. But as I understand it, you've spent more than 10 years across a number of different roles, specifically in tax, before eventually landing as a director at KPMG in the tax advisory team. You then moved out to work at the ATO, and you were a senior tax specialist there before, in your own words, you became a little bit delusional during the COVID lockdown and decided to just do it and quit your cushy government job for the exciting startup life. And I think there's some truth to that. You know, there's a lot of excitement and buzz around startups. I've heard a few people say, and certainly feel it myself, that, you know, the bug can be a little bit addicting. So, you know, how has the disillusionment turned out for you so far?
Oh, yeah, living the dream, right? living on a shoestring, number one, so it's not all that glamorous. I am paying myself only $45K a year. But thankfully, we just gave ourselves a pay rise to $120K. Yes. So, but can you imagine? Yeah, earning like $3,000 a year. I've got a mortgage, a kid, and still decided to do it. Right. And you know, this is like my second year after quitting my full time job. So the first year was kind of like a gap year where I just did nothing and earned nothing, and then finally getting some traction, found a co-founder, got some funding, and then started paying ourselves $45K. And then, it's been a year since. And now we're finally able to pay ourselves, you know, a market decent salary from 1 July. It's not all that glamorous. So I was kind of delusional. I think it was Melanie Perkins that inspired me. middle of lockdown. I think a newspaper article said, oh, Melanie Perkins worth $3 billion in 2020. And I'm like, yeah, I should start a subscription company. You know, and what do I know? Tax. So yeah, tax training it is, done. So that's the story.
Love that. And I mean, you put it really simply. So it was your, background in tax, knowledge of tax, domain expertise of that space that led you here, obviously. But, you know, was there anything in particular that made you think that, you know, despite all the numbers of failed startups and the number of people who don't get a business off the ground and don't last more than 3 years and whatever the metric is that made you think that you could do it and you could be successful? What was it that gave you that confidence?
Oh gosh, no, I don't know. I think I was, how do I put it? So I started making these videos, right? These tax training videos when I was at the tax office. And then they said, you have to stop because it's a conflict of interest, right? And then I was like, I really kind of want to keep doing it. And it was in the middle of lockdown. I didn't really think that I was getting into startups. It was just me taking a gap year off and trying to see what could happen. I actually wanted to be a Finfluencer, believe it or not, go on YouTube and get some ad money and I don't know. Yeah, so I had no idea what I was doing and I just quit my job. I'm like, I want to keep doing it, so I'm just gonna quit. and continue posting these silly tax training videos on LinkedIn. So yeah, I was really not in a very smart place.
Well, you've probably monetized it a whole lot faster than if you'd gone down the ad pathway. So that's probably something that we could get into. But I mean, how has the experience been? Has it been harder, more difficult than you expected, or anything in particular about getting it off the ground to date that you maybe underestimated in terms of the challenge?
Harder, more easy. I don't know what I expected. I think I just, you know, expected the unexpected. So I wouldn't say it was harder or easier than, yeah. But it's certainly fun, and I certainly will never look back. Yeah, like, you know, listeners who are ex-accountants that used to have clients, you would know that, yeah, not having clients is so awesome. So you'd never go back there, right? So building a product is so much more, I find, rewarding in a sense than you know, you get rewarded by, you know, dealing with customers as well. But building a product is a different type of reward, which I kind of prefer, yeah, after I've done this for a couple of years now.
And I think in the prep work that we did, which is, I think this is an interesting little discussion to have, is that how building a startup and a product is different to running a services-based business. I think you were kind of alluding to the fact that, like, it took you a while to kind of train yourself to do things differently. Can you give us a little insight into what you mean by that and what the differences are? And yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Massive, right? Like, I wrote a few things down so I wouldn't forget. But like, you know, like back when I was servicing clients, you always had like 11 months of the year working in the business, you know, providing advice, and then you'll get maybe 1 month in a year to work on the business. Whereas building a product company is, you know, 11 months working on the business, working on the product, and you know, you have 1 month holiday. That's it, you know, which is something that I was so fascinated to learn about, right? And I had to learn how to like just let the fires burn. Like, you know, every time, we're a subscription-based company, so we do online learning live events. So we'll get, you know, people churning, and then they'll leave comments. And it's being, you know, used to be in the professional services industry, I would want to read and respond to every feedback, every comment, and address every single issue. Because that's the way my brain was wired. But, you know, in a product company, you just have to like just look at it holistically as data, and then analyze, take a step back, and then work out which item are we actually going to work on, because every little thing we work on, we want to work on it almost like to perfection, and really invest the time to actually fix it. So we can't just like one day work on this, tomorrow work on another thing. So that's something that I really learned. Whereas, yeah, back in the day, you know, the client that shouted the loudest would just get the most attention.
Yeah, well, I mean, I still think that maybe that's just part of what you've figured out. I think there's still a lot of startups that get caught in the trap of listening to the loudest customer and trying to figure out, you know, or trying to build their roadmap around that, which can be dangerous in itself. And you also mentioned the word perfection, which I think is quite interesting given most startups certainly aren't seeking perfection. But I think I understand generally what you're saying, you know, just around trying to prioritize making things better.
Correct. Maybe I don't mean perfection, but maybe I mean something like do less, but do better, instead of trying to do everything. And that's probably one of the biggest lessons that I learned in the past year.
I mean, is that separate, or maybe that's just related to that value density concept that you kind of brought up as well in some of the conversations we were having earlier? So, I mean, maybe for the listeners, can you explain value density, and can you kind of maybe give some insight into what you're doing around that?
Yeah. So I don't know what the technical startup definition of value density is, but for us, it's working out, you know, who is our target customer, like the ideal customer persona, and then, you know, working on all our products and features. And for us, mainly, it's the content, right? And trying to deliver, you know, like 50, 70, 80, even 100% of you know, what they're actually looking for. And in our case, it's about continuing professional development. So it's like ticking all their boxes where they can just come to us as a one-stop shop, and they get all of their CPD, continuing professional development, for that particular customer. before moving on to the next, customer segment or market segment. And it's very, very tempting right now to just move on. So we have a very, very small market segment at the moment, which is purely accounting firms that are that have clients. So and we're aiming only small to medium firms. But it's very, very tempting. Just last week, we won the entire finance team of an Australian listed corporate. Right? But that's not our target customer. That's just someone that just came in and decided to sign up. But it's so easily to just get distracted and say, oh, hey, yeah, you want transfer pricing content, international content, cross-border content. Yeah, we can do that. I mean, we can, but, stay focused, Joyce, deliver the value density first before moving on to the next item, the next shiny object.
Joyce, just to jump in for a question on that, you're kind of alluding to something that, obviously the best thought leaders and investors and startup operators out there always say is one of the most important qualities for an early stage startup, and that's focus. Focus is everything, whether it's like you said, if your customers and what they're demanding or what you're developing in the product, and all the different aspects. So but from your perspective and your experience so far, what's key for you to achieving that focus and knowing when you're getting distracted and when this is an avenue to pursue?
The best thing for me is that I have a co-founder that keeps me focused. I am the most easily distracted person, and I am the most opportunistic person. That's why I'm sort of the sales team of one. And the marketing team as well. I'll jump on every opportunity. I'll overcommit to anything. And then thankfully, my co-founder is the antithesis of me. So whenever I'm like, hey, Ross, we should do this. And he's like, Joyce, stop. What's the opportunity cost? Who's going to do it? And then he'll basically shut down the idea. And I'm like, okay, you're right. And then just stay focused. So I think it's about realizing, your own personality, your own behaviors, and then, finding systems to cope and to try and change that. So I purposefully chose a co-founder that, coincidentally is the opposite of me in everything in terms of skills and behaviors. So yeah, he covers all of my weaknesses and I cover all of his. Does that help? Does that answer the question, Johan?
Yeah, no, that answers it. I'll ask a quick follow-up question that leads to actually the next topic, but with your co-founder, how do you make sure that those interactions have a healthy friction that gets in the right direction rather than create some resentment or any other issues?
So I think this is very personal. So I think a successful relationship with a co-founder is basically you leave your ego at the door. Yeah, you have to come into the relationship completely humble and you got to be very mature, I think. When we first, got together, it was, we went through the Antler process. If you've heard of Antler, it's like basically Tinder for co-founders, sort of similar to Y Combinator. And so we went through a very structured process. They had like a dating questionnaire for us, pretty much like a co-founder questionnaire, and we went through it. And so we sort of nutted out all of those deep and meaningful issues right at the beginning. But we're just not afraid to have those difficult conversations. And we're just very open people and just leave the ego at the door, So that's all I can say.
The co-founder part is obviously quite important. You also mentioned to me in some of the prep that one of the mistakes you made was not getting a co-founder sooner. So why is that? Why do you say that?
I think for a long time, I thought that I could do everything on my own. And I was very much, no one else can do it or care about this as much as me. And as soon as I met Ross, that has changed quite drastically. I think it's more about learning about, you know, strengths of somebody else and what they can bring to the table, and you know, realizing that I'm human and I can't do everything on my own. And also, I think I didn't realize that I wanted to build a tech company at the start. and then, you know, finally realizing that, yeah, I am building a tech company and you know, trying to get that co-founder. How do I say this? It's like, I didn't know I was building a tech company until I found a co-founder in the tech space. And then I realized, actually, I am building a tech company, but I was trying to do it on my own for the longest time. Like, what the heck? So I guess, yeah, that's what I mean. Mm.
And I think for other, like, heaps of people in accounting tech who are the original founders or co-founders are non-technical. And I mean non-technical from a not engineering perspective, they're technical from an accounting perspective. And I think for a lot of them, it is hard to find somebody that they really trust to come along that journey with them. You kind of alluded to it a little bit around the process Antler took you through, but how do you find somebody maybe in a very short period of time and then come to terms that they're going to be, you know, part owners, co-founders, and you're basically your entire business is going to be reliant on them, and you don't really necessarily understand the ins and outs of what they're doing every day and how they do it and whether or not their code is good. You know, how do you come to terms with that and trust this person?
Oh gosh, it's tough. Yeah, I didn't know when I went into the Antler program, I was like, gosh, finding a co-founder is harder than finding a life partner, I felt. Who's going to understand me or, yeah, like my mindset about money, about business, about, you know, vision, mission. But I went in there with a really open mind. You know, I was ready to go into somebody else's business or, you know, for my own team. So I just went in there with a really, really open mind. And I think I just got lucky. I think once you have that mindset, like opportunities just open up. Yeah, I think, yeah, maybe just the stars aligned or something. But yeah, to me, the only advice I can give you, your listeners, is just to keep an open mind. Yeah, but definitely, yeah, programs like Antler certainly accelerates it. It really forces you to, like, we did like speed networking within, you know, within 1 week you had to like know everybody in the first week. Second week you have to like start making like really close connections. And then the third week you got to start working on your idea. And then week 10, you got to pitch, you know, for your idea and get the funding. So you got basically only 2 weeks to pick someone. And I think being trusting is massive. So really open up your world to someone is key. But I have no issues with that. So I'm a completely open book. I believe in you know, radical transparency, and maybe that's why I kind of found a co-founder quite easily.
Joyce, to ask you maybe just a final question around the co-founder aspect of things. You touched on something I just think it's worth exploring a little bit more, because it is extremely important, and that's putting your ego aside. We, you know, it's often celebrated, like the founders of the big egos, and that's the ones usually people make movies about. But actually working with founders that have a huge ego, and if they're also very smart and have a huge ego, usually that results with overconfidence, and that doesn't work very well in the startup space. And it's not pleasant to actually work with founders that have huge egos. So you kind of touched, that's a key part of how you've got that trust and how you remain, you've got like healthy friction that gives you focus. Do you feel like you've got like a shared goal, which is that's what makes it easy to put your ego aside, because you both want to achieve that goal? It's not about your egos?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's also... the shared goals definitely help, but I think the number one thing with finding a co-founder is the alignment of values. So how we think about money has to align. I would say that's a very big thing. You can't have a one co-founder that's like very generous with money and another one that's very tight ass, because they come from really different backgrounds, right? You know, somebody wants to like, you know, give lots of discounts to grow the user base, and another one wants to keep price at a certain, then everything just falls apart, because like ultimately the underlying value is completely different. Or, you know, when getting investors as well, it's like, do we give up dilution for how much? Like, you know, you just can't, if you don't have the same values, like you're never going to be able to come up with, you know, a compromise, something, a decision, I think. But yeah, definitely the goal, I think, it's not so important. I definitely think values is number one.
You mentioned as part of the co-founder discussion the need to be transparent and that you're an open book, and that kind of actually takes us into the next question around the approach you're taking to building in public. What you've been doing and putting out to the world, especially in the LinkedIn bubble that I'm seeing it through, has been quite exceptional. I don't think I've seen anybody else doing it to that degree. And obviously, as you know, as people who run a business that's built around community, you know, I can understand the value of sharing your story and allowing other people to come along the journey with you. Can you just quickly kind of talk, you know, the listeners through why you chose to go that route versus, you know, I suppose the alternative, and, you know, what your goals are with it and how you found it today, any mistakes you've made, that kind of thing?
So the number one reason I did it back in day zero was desperation. So I quit my job. It was like April or May 2020. We just came out of lockdown in Melbourne. And, you know, it was great. People were seeing each other again. And then bang, lockdown again. And I couldn't go out and do any business. I couldn't do any networking. So my sole window of opportunity was through social media. And I'm just like, I'm going to go all out. And I'm going to do radical transparency. I'm going to, like, you know, sing songs about tax. And that's what I did. So number one is marketing, is to get eyeballs. And I was thinking, you know, what do accountants like to see? Accountants are nosy. They want to look at numbers and charts and graphs. And they want real stories. Because, like, we are targeting SME accountants. And they're all about the, you know, no bullshit, just give it to me straight. Don't say that I have a seven-figure business when, you know, just tell me the raw numbers, right? Is it 1 million or is it 9 million? Like that's a huge difference, you know? That's what accountants want to see. And so that's what I did. But also because we want to be, you know, we're kind of like Udemy in a sense that we want to attract instructors, right, to work with us. Right. And we want to show that we have revenue to share. And so the only way to do it is by publishing our revenue. And then, you know, I thought one day I need to get some funding. Right. Because, you know, I've got no money. You know, I'm not a rich kid. My parents are not rich. And I'm like, yeah, I'll just post it and just see if anyone wants to invest in me in the future as well. So it's like, how bad can it be? Right. Like if it fails, then I'll just stop posting it and no one will notice. So, yeah, and so since day zero, I just kept on doing it, right? And so happened, thankfully, it's an upward trajectory. Yeah, otherwise you won't be seeing it.
Other than loving to see behind the scenes and, you know, hearing from people who, you know, don't beat around the bush, what else do you know or appreciate about having accountants as your end customer? And, you know, obviously anybody who's listening, if they're building a startup for accountants, you know, there's a few tricks of the trade in this space, and there's a few things that make them unique compared to other buyers, but I'm keen to get your take on accountants as a customer.
Yeah. So, and you know, you mentioned that a lot of your listeners are founders that are ex-accountants, sort of like have domain expert, right? So they should know this, right? Accountants are tight ass. Like, you know, there's, you know, B2C market, which is like the tightest ass market, in terms of, like, you know, Netflix subscription is $9.99 and you get people canceling every other month just to try to save $10, or, you know, sharing their Spotify, you know, $10 a month fee. So it's they're not as tight as B2C, but there's still there's a special spot for accountants, right? They're not exactly B2B generous, and they also have a longer sales conversion cycle. I think for SME, just based on some Googling, it is about 8 or 9 weeks is their buying cycle from introduction to close of sale. But also, accountants are busy. Like, everyone's busy, right? But bloody hell, accountants are very, I won't say the F word, but they are very, very busy. Like, their entire life is, you know, working life is like measured in 6 minute units, right? You know, my charge out rate used to be $900 when I was in Big Four tax advisory, right? Every time I went to the toilet, that costs like, you know, $100. So don't waste their time when you sell them products. Just get to it. They don't care about your background or, you know, how great your product is. Just show them an example of how it applies in their lives and move on. Yeah, that's it.
I'll try not to take the personal attack about my Netflix and Spotify behavior, but you described me, I think, pretty well.
There's another special spot for B2C consumers that are accountants. Yeah.
And that's me. Absolutely. Both in one. Look, this has been really good. Obviously, I'd love to keep going, but we only have so much time, and we have a final question that we have to ask you because we ask everybody. So, based on your experience today, you know, if you can look back on your journey, are there any classic startup or accounting specific tar pits that, you know, you really want to kind of highlight for any other accounting tech startups out there? Ideas that on the surface look great, look shiny, look glamorous, but under the hood are anything but.
Yeah. So, I mean, easy. It's venture capital. So we have raised from venture capital, and I've had to go through a very, very steep learning curve about what it actually means to take money from venture capital. It's got its pros and cons, but yeah, it's not for everyone. So we are kind of we haven't gone down the path of no return, which is having to raise more and more and more and more just to survive. We're sort of in that, or we're sort of trying a hybrid model. You know, given the current environment now, it's like everything's sort of changing. You know, even venture capital is kind of changing now. They're trying to go for more like sustainable businesses. So, you know, watch the space. It's not, you know, definite. But I would say, yeah, the pros is like, you know, you're not, you don't have revenue yet. You know, you're still building the product. Perhaps you can't even bootstrap. Like, you need a significant amount of funding to even, you know, get the product ready. Then, you know, venture capital is your only choice, really, unless you got rich friends and family, right? So that's the number one pro, is really accelerating that product development. But the con is, yeah, like, think you're just stuck in that track and there's no point of return, right? So it's like you're hemorrhaging cash, paying developers and, you know, cost of acquisition, and the only way to continue before achieving cash flow positive is to get your next round of funding, right? Next round. And when is it going to stop, you know? And what if you don't get your next round of funding? And also, just keep in mind that there's a dilution factor. Every round of funding is 20% off your pie. You know, I'm talking about like a two-person. Yeah, it's 20% usually for every round. When it's like, you know, seed round, Series A, Series B, and at some point you're left with very, very little. And you know, as a founder, it's ordinary shares. So everyone eats first. So they've got preference shares, and then you eat last. And it's like then you're stuck in having to grow to get the pie really, really massive. Yeah, like it just you just have so little options when you start going down that VC track. Like, you've just lost complete control except to grow as fast as possible at whatever cost, right? I'm not sure if that's the path for us. And so, you know, like, I want to have the best of both worlds. I kind of want to still have control and still have, you know, ownership, but I don't want to, but I still want to be fast. Like, I still want to, like, real quick growth. So I don't know what's the solution, but, you know, we take it one day at a time.
Thank you, Joyce. That was awesome and a great place to finish a really important lesson for any founders or founders to be listening in. So yeah, thank you once again for joining us. Awesome conversation, brilliant insight, and good luck on the rest of the journey.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jack. Thanks, Johan.
Thank you once again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are a potential founder in your early stages of developing a product, or elsewhere in the journey struggling to achieve product market fit, we would love for you to reach out at www.earlyadoptershub.com. This has been another episode of the Accounting Tech Tar Pit, presented by Early Adopters Hub, the accelerator for accounting tech.